Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Man on the Mic podcast, hosted by Jeffrey Mann. This podcast is dedicated to honest discussions that inspire, connect, and bring out the best in our guests. Now let's get started with the show. Here's your host, Jeffrey Mann.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Man on the Mic. I'm Jeff, your host. Today, I'm super excited. I'm joined by my brother, Cody Sperber, killing it in the real estate game. Amazing father, just got engaged. Mm-hmm. She's pregnant, baby on the way.
That's right.
Awesome. So I want to give you a little bit, just to introduce yourself, let everyone know who you are.
Yeah, first off, thanks for having me on. Short answer to that is from Arizona. After the Navy, I was in the Navy for 4 years. I found creative no money down real estate. A friend of mine flipped a house and made a bunch of money. And you got to go back to 2003. There wasn't education online or anything like that. So it was quite a journey. It took me 14 months to do my first no money down real estate deal, but I was hooked. The second I did it, I knew it changed my life. It was a wholesale transaction where I made $40,000. And I just fell in love with this idea of doing real estate. And I lit up, and it was the first time in my life that I felt like I was on the right path with the right, you know, I had the right money-making vehicle, and I was very excited about it, and I was willing to sacrifice, and I didn't want to do anything else. I didn't want to party anymore. I didn't want to chase girls. I didn't want any distractions. I just want to put my head down and become real estate rich because we didn't have a lot of money growing up, and it took me only a couple months to do my second deal, and then 1 month to do my third deal, and then 2 weeks to do my fourth deal, and I started collapsing time, and next thing you know, I'm a real estate investor, and I'm full-time. And now thousands and thousands of transactions later, I have a development company called Green Elephant Development. We build high-end luxury spec builds, and mainly in Arizona where we're licensed. I own a bunch of the verticals within the real estate space, a funding company, a title company. You know, anybody who's making money on the real estate transaction, I try to buy into or at least partner with those companies that are making money off my transactions, just because that's what a savvy entrepreneur does. Yeah. I got pretty dang good at real estate, and a lot of people started coming up to me. And starting in 2009, I started a education company called Clever Investor, and we scaled that to be one of the largest online education companies. I was at the right place at the right time with social media just being born, and I loved real estate so much because of what it's done for me and my family that I couldn't shut up about it. Yeah. So I was just like, you know, you got to go back before like people were like influencers were recording. Like that wasn't a thing, but I was recording my transactions. So I'd be standing in front of a house going, okay, here's the breakdown of this deal and kind of doing case studies and stuff. And then I just post them on YouTube and post them online, and other real estate investors started watching it. And so I started getting a lot of followers, and that was kind of cool. And then next thing you know, my education company took off and we blew that thing up. And, now I own a flooring company called Floor Daddy. We're scaling that. Got two kids and a new fiance with the baby on the way. So we're cranking, dude.
Congrats again.
Yeah, thank you.
Awesome. So we got back 2 weeks ago from Clever Summit. I wanted to ask, was that the final Clever Summit? Is that it?
For me, it was the final Clever Summit. Yeah, so I sold Clever Investor at the end of last year to Chris Krohn out of Utah. And I had a transition period where, you know, anytime you're merging a company, you know, it was a good synergistic sale relationship between us because he's mainly buy and hold, and I was like quick flipping, making money now. Yeah. So all my education fit pretty smoothly with his. And so it took a while for our teams to kind of gel and get together. So I wanted to make sure that handoff was done properly. And now it's kind of more just, you know, keeping things in alignment between the two companies, make sure the team's taken care of. But my main focus is my Clever Capital Fund, which real estate's crazy right now, bro. Yeah. It shifted a lot in the last couple of years. I was mainly for 20 something years, I was in single family and, you know, lots of single family stuff with a little bit of commercial, a little bit of multifamily. Now, almost all my business is commercial and multifamily and very little single family, just because that's where the market's going. And I learned that, you know, it feels very scary and overwhelming when you're starting in real estate to think about like doing a like big commercial deal or a big multifamily deal because the numbers are huge. Yeah. But it's actually easier to do a big deal. The finding the money is easier. managing the deals are easier. Everything's easier because with little deals, one little thing can throw the whole thing into a tailspin.
Yeah.
But with these big deals, you know, you can bring in really high caliber team members to help you. It's not just based around you and your work. And the deal can allow it to afford that caliber of talent and skills. And so we've just been focused on big deals. So I got the Clever Capital Fund. I got Floor Daddy that we're scaling. And I'm not going to throw any more events, but I think Chris will probably do some I taught him the model.
Okay.
Right? Because throwing an event is a it's a model.
Yeah.
I used to throw events where we'd get 1,000 people in a room and we'd make $1 million. Right? And that was like the event model. And it would mainly be me and maybe me and like three speakers talking at somebody. Now when I throw events, it's an experience.
Yeah.
A couple years ago, I learned through sitting down with some very talented people that really mastered the event model. They were making, you know, between $10 to $25 million an event. And I was able to sit down with them and go, how are you doing this? Like, what's the thing that I'm missing? Because you're throwing events, I'm throwing events. You have 1,000 people. I have 1,000 people. You're making $10 million and I'm making $1 million. Like,
yeah.
What's the differentiator? And they said, because you're not creating an interactive experience with these people. There's an actual psychological arc that you have to take somebody through in a 2 or 3 day period to get them to ever want to pull out a credit card and or wire money to you and do business with you. And so once they taught me the event model, I started throwing these big events, and you know, we were making, you know, $7, $8, $9 million an event all of a sudden. And it was beautiful. And just to tie a bow on that is, you know, first off, every speaker is designed to be in a certain spot. So like we build frames. This is good for your marketing brain. We build frames long before we throw the event. So like my frames of this event was make money, multiply money, manage money, make it matter, right? So we take our event attendees through this story arc of like, okay, everybody's got to make money. Nobody's even going to listen to anything until we start making some serious bread. And then now we're making this money. How do we put our money to work for us and start multiplying the money? And then, hey, who likes to pay taxes? Raise your hand. Nobody.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go ahead and talk about managing your money better and not, you know, wasting it, spending it on taxes so they could buy bombs and ship them overseas and kill people. Like nobody wants that, right?
Exactly.
So it's like, okay. And then the last part is like, why are we doing this? We're doing this because we want to make our money matter.
Yeah.
And so the attendees get a workbook and it has all those different sections. Our speakers go into one of those different sections. Our offer fits into perfectly, you know, in alignment with that type of offer. So now before they're even coming, our color patterns, our language patterns, our t-shirts, our check-in process, everything's talking about these frames and these subframes. And now we take them on the psychological journey and we make millions and millions of dollars and they love it, right?
Love it.
And so I needed to teach Chris that event model. Now he sees it. He gets like,
yeah,
okay, this is how I do it. But I'm now ready to graduate.
Yeah.
It's time for me to move on. You know, I've done it. I've done education since 2009. Have you ever felt like there's more in you?
Yeah.
But you're limited because you're in a vehicle and it's comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, I made a lot of money. It was a good business. I love to train. I love to educate. But I know that that's not my full potential.
Yeah.
And 2 years ago, my mom passed away and I was going through a divorce at the same freaking time, which is like, you know, rock bottom's basement.
Yeah.
Like you're just at the lowest low and you're just kind of reevaluating yourself. And it sucks that some of us are so hard-headed that it takes us getting ran over before we like wake up a little bit. But I just made a decision when I was kind of in that space. I was like, God, I'm killing the money game, but I'm losing almost everything else.
Yeah.
And it's a weird feeling to be so unhappy but have the ability to cut a check for anything.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
it doesn't buy happiness.
And it's weird. You know, humans are the only species that we know of that has the ability to have real consciousness. That feeling of love, that feeling of despair, that feeling, you know, and I was in that place where it just felt so heavy and overwhelming. And I'm like, God, I'm better off than 99.9% of the world and I'm miserable.
Yeah.
This is so screwed up.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to waste the rest of my summers that I was, you know, busting ass working. Like, why am I not being the best dad on planet Earth? Why don't my kids adore me?
Yeah.
Why am I not ripped? Why am I not in the best shape of my life? You know, 1 in 8 Americans are considered millionaires on paper, but only 1 in 26,000 have a six pack. That's a weird thought of like, why are more people making money, but they're unhealthy.
Yeah.
And when my mom was passing away, I would have gave up every dollar I ever made in the future to have her healthy and okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, so this actually needs to become a major priority. And I also – I was an atheist. I had no relationship with God. If you would have told me, I would have been like, it's just a big money game. I don't want anything to do with that. Like, yeah. It's just a hustle, right? Like, mm-hmm. Shit, I want to own a church so I can make money and not pay taxes. But I never thought of it like a connection or something. But I did feel like I was missing something from my life, like a big piece was missing, and I couldn't put my finger on it. And when I was going through therapy after my mom died, they were talking about your intimacy circles, and it's like a dartboard, and in the center where the bullseye is, they said, who's supposed to be in the center? And I said, I don't know, me, I guess. And they said, well, you and your creator. Because if you don't believe in something bigger than you, then you're never gonna, you know, believe like that there's ever anything else. So why would you ever, you know, care about anything if there's nothing more than just you? If you're the God, then there's nothing else. And I started thinking about it, and I was like, you know what? Like anything in my life, if I go to the gym, I gotta like put in the reps. If I'm doing business, I gotta put in the reps. Like no wonder I don't have a relationship. I don't put in any reps at all. And so I just, you know, I started looking at all these other pillars of my life, and I just made a decision that day, like I'm gonna be ripped rich and rare. I'm gonna be that guy that's gunning on all cylinders, and I'm gonna show up in the second half of my life, the version of me that I don't even have to really introduce myself anymore. I'll walk into a room and my energy's in front of me.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, okay, now I'm feeling it. I'm in the zone. And it's taken 2 years, and you know, I'm definitely way stronger and better than I was. I still got a long way to go, but you know, I started with, you know, in the example of my spiritual side, I just started praying. I didn't even know who I was praying to. I didn't even know how to pray.
Yeah.
You know, I was just talking to myself, kind of as if I was talking to God, but I've never heard anything back. Where are you, dude? I've never heard anything back. It's a one-way conversation.
Yeah.
But what I did start to notice is that the more I prayed and the more I was starting to get grounded and connected with my version of, you know, like I'm a Christian. So like for me, that's what I believe. The more things started moving in my world that was always kind of just moving in my favor. And I started to realize like, you know, there was never a situation that I was put in that I wasn't capable of handling. And now, you know, 2 years later, I feel like, okay, I'm starting to have that relationship.
I love that.
And I was doing it with my kids, and now my daughter is like my best friend. You know, she's 13 years old. It's a really cool feeling when your daughter starts telling you secrets.
Yeah.
You're like, oh shit, I'm like actually cool. I'm like the cool dad now, like versus just the dad that makes a lot of money that's disconnected.
Yeah.
That was a long ass answer to your are you going to throw another event question? No, but like that's why I'm not throwing an event, because it's like I've now elevated my belief system to believe that like I'm thinking way too small.
Yeah.
And that events are cool, but I want to do something globally. Like I want to make a real big impact.
I love that. I'm curious because as I've joined a coaching group myself and I see myself starting to level up, I've realized there's people that I've surrounded myself with, friends, acquaintances that I don't either spend time with now or I don't get along with. Because I feel like I'm moving this way and they're still stuck.
Yeah.
They're not bad people. They're just not spending that time to work on themselves. So I'm curious on this two-year journey. Is that something you've seen with your circle?
You know, the good news is I probably went through that evolution earlier. I didn't hang around anybody that wasn't already gunning and super on. But I definitely have added some new elements in friends. It's not like I'm firing friends because they're losers or something like that. I've already done that phase. I'm just adding new spiritual mentors and mentors like I have some friends that are like, to me, are the best dads I've ever met in my life. They're so connected with their family and their kids, and they play so full out with that I just have gotten a lot closer with them so I can study that greatness and mirror what they're doing. So it's more of an addition now, you know, to add more spiritual mentors, more physical mentors, more family mentors and stuff versus just gunning for the money.
Yeah.
which was my sole focus for, you know, more than a decade. It was just like, let's fucking go get this money.
Yeah.
And eventually you get the money and you buy the stuff, and then you realize you just built yourself a big ass luxury prison.
Yeah. I like that. I'm curious, going back to the event, one of the experiences I had, so I was with, I got on the elevator, and Tim Story's on the elevator.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
One of the attendees
so
gets
good.
On. Yeah, and so I know who Tim was, and I didn't say anything. And the lady gets on, and she looks at him, who are you? What do you do? And I just thought, how do you come to an event and you don't know the speakers that have been listed? Because I said, within that moment, you could have asked him something that could have added value to your life rather than, who are you? And so I'm curious, what is your advice for people preparing to go to an event like that?
You know, I don't know if I have advice other than whenever I showed up to an event, it's not like I took a ton of time to research every speaker. So I understand why maybe she didn't know who Tim was. And we added Tim late. You know, Tim's been on Oprah a bunch of times. Like, he's legendary.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would say just, you know, show up with the intention to play full out at the event. Because nothing pisses me off more or just rubs me the wrong way than somebody who takes the time to come to an event, but they're so closed off. They're these people in the back of the room. You know, they're like just closed.
Yeah.
They don't want to talk to anybody. They're almost like looking for the problem.
Yeah.
And it's like, why? Come, that's your problem in life. You need to like unfold your arms and lean in a little bit and say, you know what? I'm going to be very enthusiastic and intentional while I'm here, and I'm going to get the most out of this experience and be open. And I'm going to serve every person in that room. I'm going to serve. Even if I don't have a lot to offer, I'm going to do anything I can to add value to every relationship that I meet in that room. And that was always my way of moving on up the food chain, was just like, look, I didn't have money, but I had a great attitude. And I was very enthusiastic, and I wanted to be there, and I wanted to help every single person that was there. And that opened up a lot of doors because I made people feel good, right? And the other thing I would say is become a great introducer, right? Like, let's say I got to know you and I'm like, God, Jeff's such a great – he's the best I've ever seen at PR and marketing and funnels and copywriting or whatever like your skills were, and I got to know those. Imagine if now every time we walked into a room, I'm like, guys, meet Jeff, dude. He's the bomb, dude. He's the best dude ever. This guy floats on water. By the time I'm done talking about you, you're just like, dude, I didn't even realize how awesome I am, right? Imagine that kind of introduction. Well, my business partner, Bryant – that's how he is. He's one of the best networkers I've ever met. And he'll go on and on and on like you're like the king of everything.
Yeah.
And you're just like, dude, I'm just like a marketer. I'm just like a this. Like, I never even thought of myself as like that way. But it makes you feel so good. And then everybody wants to talk to you. And the networking just naturally starts to happen.
I love that.
And so if you're going to show up at an event, maybe that's your skill set. And the last piece of advice I'll say is nobody's going to remember Cody Sperber. But they will remember Cody Sperber, the clever investor, Big Cody from Texas, right? If I'm a big guy from Texas, I'm going to be Big Steve from Texas.
Yeah.
Because you need a hook. You need something that's going to make you stand out.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, everybody's out passing out business cards and like you forget that person's name within 3 seconds. And now it's all mixed up in a bunch of other cards.
Yeah.
But if you have a hook and you repeat it enough, it's going to stick. That's why, you know, building a personal brand is so important. You got to – for me, I've never filmed a video. I don't think I filmed a video where I didn't do two things on that video that I put out. Number one, it's always like, what's up, guys? Cody Sperber, the clever investor here. And that just kept hooking them. And then the last thing is when I sign off of a video, I'm like, all right, guys, I'm out of here. Take care. Comb your hair. I don't know why I say that. It's just a stupid little hook. But it's one of those things that people start to finish my sentence for me, right? They're like, hey, see you, Sperber. Take care. Comb your hair. And it's like, oh, shit, I repeated that enough that people get it now. And I stand out.
I love that. I love that. I love that. Have a hook. Have a reason. It's one of the reasons for me, at least. Well, two things. I'm mainly based out of Utah. And so I knew that most of the rooms I go to Utah, I'm one of the only black people in the room. I know I'm going to stick out no matter what. But then I add working out to it.
Yeah.
And so the last year, going with Chris to events, people always thought I was his bodyguard. So one of the things I started doing is I carry a fake earpiece and I put it on and I freaking play. I'm like, okay, if you think I'm the bodyguard, let's do it.
Yeah.
because I realized I cannot walk into any room or go backstage anywhere and they look at me like, oh, it's the bodyguard, he's fine. They just assume.
Yeah.
And so I kind of said, you know, this could either annoy me or how do I use this to do business?
Yeah, I love that.
And just played all in, and I'm like, I'm going to sell it. It's one of the reasons I love to live in the gym, because I also know, you know, and one thing I've seen with all the influencers and speakers I've met is they're all big into health, mm-hmm. big into fitness. One of the hardest things for me after the Clever Summit is I went up to Universal Studios, took my sister. She had never been to Harry Potter World. So we went on the rides. But looking at the people at the theme park, 300 pounds, they're on scooters,
yeah.
double churros in both hands.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, shouldn't you guys be walking? And it was just so hard to go be around people in the fitness and their body and money and just their understandings, and then go to a theme park where you see people just throwing money away and have no care about their health.
Oh, yeah. America's by far the most obese nation. You know, it's funny. I saw something about the obesity rate in Japan is the like one of the lowest in out of all the countries. And they were interviewing kids in Japan saying like – you know, and they were showing them like candy and stuff, and they're like, why would we want to eat that? But they showed them broccoli, and they're like, yeah, that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's what they feed them in schools. That's what their parents feed them. They don't feed them junk food and all this processed shit.
Yeah.
Right? You know what? I would love to ask you a question, because I'm thinking about doing this. I'm thinking about going carnivore.
Okay.
Dude, I've never really gone on any of these like crazy diets like paleo or carnivore, but I've been watching a lot of videos on this. Like, if you think about just the amount of processed additives, fake stuff in all of our food here in America. And there's like – I saw something like Chick-fil-A had something like one chicken sandwich had like 48 ingredients in it or something. Did you see that thing?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, dude, it's just chicken, right? How is there 48 things in this piece of chicken? Well, that's how we are with all our stuff. But over in Europe, they don't allow a lot of that, right? And so, you know, if you go back in the day, like what did we – even vegetables – vegetables have been kind of grown over time to have like toxins and stuff in them because they don't want to be eaten.
Yeah.
Right? So they're like, if a mammal eats me, I probably should put some shit in here that makes it unhealthy on some level. But we've been marketed to so much that we believe that vegetables are super healthy.
Yeah.
What if they're not? Right? What if like eggs, cheese, and meat was like what all our ancestors ate forever? And now we're introduced to all this other crap, and that's why we're always inflamed and feeling like crap and addicted to caffeine because we're eating all this shit.
Yeah. It's accessible. It's cheaper. I lived in Africa for 7 years of my life, and it's the healthiest I've ever been living over there because they don't have all the crap that we have here.
Mm-hmm.
You're not eating cereal every morning. You can't just run to a gas station and get a Snickers bar.
Yeah.
A lot of their stuff there is fresh. And it doesn't keep because you don't have electricity a lot of the time. And so it's just getting stuff. It's, you know, you're killing a chicken. They kill the chicken in front of you. Whatever it is, it's all fresh and it's healthy.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting. The last time I moved back, I went with two friends. We went to Golden Corral.
And we had a plethora of shit.
And we had a breakdown because we saw these people, the amount of food they were piling on and wasting after being in Africa. And I was just like, why? How?
Yeah.
And, you know, cake, ice cream, they're just shoveling it in.
It's all, I think that's what I'm stressing about is like, okay, what if I eliminated most of the sugars and like even carbs, sugars, vegetables, everything fruit breaks down to sugar.
Yeah.
Right? And what if I can eliminate that out? So
why carnivore, if I can ask you?
Well, it's just... The more I learn about it, the more it kind of is like the most natural, just kind of straight path to like a guy who works out a lot like me. Like, obviously, I need a lot of fats and proteins.
Yeah.
I don't really need carbs in the way that I've used to eat carbs.
Yeah.
Right? And I definitely don't need the sugars.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's just like it makes a lot of sense. And you watch guys like Joe Rogan and some of these guys, like they're out there hunting. You know, I don't know how to fucking hunt. I've never hunted.
Might be the one to help you then.
Can you help me, dude?
Dude, my dad and my brother, they go guide every year for like 2 months out of the year. And like, I won't talk to my dad for like a month.
He's just out there hunting?
Just hunting for a month straight. Like, they just got back last week or 2 weeks ago. So they go do that every year. My family's big into that whole hunting atmosphere.
Yeah, I want to learn how to hunt. I stress because I don't like to hurt animals. I think that was always my hang up. It was like, no, I don't want to do that. Why would I do that? But if I'm eating all that meat, and utilizing it, you know, then I would rather have fresh stuff that I knew where it came from, that I had a part in the processing of it. And I don't know, I'm turning over to, like, now I need to learn how to hunt.
That's the best thing that happened to, like, our family, is because we had multiple freezers full, like, out of the year. And then if we ever wanted a cow, we have a family friend that owns a farm. So we got grass-fed beef and all that. We never went to the grocery store. Because you really don't know what's processed in all that meat, too. So it was good having, like, just natural meat growing up and coming from deer, elk, moose. Yeah. You're getting it all, so...
And that I think, really, like, cool. One of the benefits of, like, making a lot of money is now you have choices,
yeah.
Right? Like I saw an ad, I almost bought them the other day, underwear that doesn't have microplastics in it, like nylon and stuff like that has all this plastic in it.
Yeah.
And the pitch was, your balls are being infected right now by microplastics.
Oh, I saw that.
And I'm like, wait, now I got to be scared of my underwear?
Yeah.
Like, but there's probably some truth to that. Like,
yeah. Have you gone and done Sean Kelly's podcast, the Social Hour?
Yeah.
So he is a health nut. And so every time I talk with him, I stop eating different things because he has an app on his phone. We go places. He looks up everything in the food. And things.
Yeah.
And it's just like, and I think he had a guy on his podcast that talked about the underwear and how it can affect you and everything. And it's just like,
I'm not going to be able to do shit here in the future. I'm going to have to
be
just
naked.
Yeah, I'm just going to go back to the day. Yeah. Wow. Well, what are you going to do? But I think I'm going to try it, though. Okay. I'm going to give I have a friend who fasts until, like, 1, and then he eats just this massive plate of meat. And he does that twice a day. He eats twice a day, but it's massive amounts of meat, very, like, no vegetables, very little carbs, lots of fat.
Okay.
Yeah. And he's like, dude, I feel better than I've ever felt. He's off caffeine. He's shredded.
Okay. Yeah. You have to let me know how it goes.
Yeah.
And how you feel. I'm curious. COVID-19. What, someone his age who's looking to get into the real estate game, get into business, start that fitness journey, where should they start? What should they do?
Well, I think you're kind of doing it by getting proximity to power players that are doing big things, you know, just getting introduced to these conversations. You know, for me, I didn't even know that No Money Down Real Estate existed. Now with social media, it's a lot easier to get turned on to these ideas. So, like, once you hear it, look, nobody can fault you for not knowing something, right? Like, if you've never been around successful people, it's because you're not successful. It's not your fault at that time, right? Nobody's ever taught me. I've never been around somebody who's successful. What did they eat? What do they listen to? Where do they hang out? Who do they hang out with? What do they do for a living? What do they do with their money once they get it? But once you're exposed to it, then it becomes your fault. And from that day forward, the extreme ownership principle, it's your fault, right? And I tell people all the time, like, if you have a great relationship with your kids, that's your fault. If you are ripped, that's your fault. Right? You put in that work to get that result. If you're a piece of shit, that's your fault.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not making money, that's your fault. And so I would just say, look, once you get turned on to an idea or a person that is really gunning, it's something that you are interested in, it's your obligation to do whatever it takes to get proximity to that person, whether that's for free through servitude and just, you know, trying to figure out, like, you're in. And it's nothing is worse than going to somebody who's super successful and not having a plan on how to serve them. I have people all the time hit me up on DMs and they'll go, dude, I want to do exactly what you're doing. Will you mentor me? And it's like, no, right? Like, right away, no. Because now you're asking me to do something for you. Like, I'm already out.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, cut me a check and I'll pay attention to you. Otherwise, no. Or they'll even do something that I think is even worse, because it's like one step better than that, but it's even worse to me, which is, tell me how I can help you. Tell me how I can serve you. And then I'll earn some mentorship from you. And it's like, bro, you want me to answer your questions for you?
Yeah.
Like, you can't even take the time to study what I'm into and what I'm doing and come and with something creative or something of value. So that's my advice would be, like, serve your way into that circle or buy your way in. But get in, because you are one relationship away from leveling up to the next level, because it's all exposure. This whole game is just a bunch of sets of principles, and you have to be a principled man to win in 2024 and beyond. And what I mean by that is, if if I've never made $100,000 a year, I need to get around people that are making $100,000 a year, live near where people are making $100,000 a year, visit where people making $100,000 a year visit, and do what they do. But at some point, I'm going to get enough exposure to those principles, rules, that eventually I'll probably start making $100,000 a year. Now, I don't know how to get to the $500,000 a year or the $1 million level. That's a new set of principles that I got to get exposed to. In order to get there, though, I got to be around people making $500,000 a year. Or let's jump all the way to $1 million. Where do those people live? What do they do? What do they eat? Where do they work out at? Whatever. Something funny is going to happen when I realize like that next level is there and I'm going to find some of those people. It's going to scare the shit out of me because I'm not going to understand it. I'm not going to feel comfortable doing those things. I'm going to feel like the dumbest person in the room. I'm going to feel like a, you know, like what do they call that? Or imposter.
Yeah,
I'm going to feel like an imposter a little bit because it's like, dude, I don't have the money to hang out with you guys. I don't have the money to eat at these places. I don't have the money to have that fancy gym membership. But I'm going to force myself there because I promise you this, dude. Once you sit in first class, even if you couldn't afford it, but you saved up all year to fly first class that one time, the second you sit in that seat and you see all the other commoners going to the back of the plane and you got your little drink and they're serving you and you got the extra cushy seat and you're on and off first and everybody treats you different, it's very hard to undo that feeling. Yeah. You cannot unfeel success. And that exposure will fight – you'll start to fight harder to get back to first class. And the same with flying private and the same with driving in a Lamborghini. It's not the fact that you have the Lamborghini. You feel different when you put on a nice suit, a nice pair of shoes, a nice watch. You're going to war. You're going to battle. You feel better about yourself when you're driving that Lambo and pulling up to the valet and everybody's neck is breaking.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, yeah, I fucking earned this. Same thing with – being around these people, force yourself to be around these people making $1 million a year because you'll get exposed, then you'll start to level up, then you'll fall way backwards, which is a weird feeling because you'll fuck everything up because you haven't mastered them yet. But as you keep fighting and you go back down, you'll springboard up and now you're back at this level. And this is what people mean by unlocking the next level. You'll never know what that next level – it's hard to say like what is the next level. It's just being exposed to people playing the game at a higher level than you in whatever category you want to dominate. So that's it. That's my best advice is don't be one of these people on social media that talks a big game. I would rather have you dip out for 2 years, never say a damn thing, go put in the work and pop back out at the next level. And I'd be like, oh, shit. Look at him. He's ripped now.
Yeah.
You know, he's gunning.
Yeah.
And we'll feel that. Yeah. And it gets easier, by the way. Every next level gets a little easier to break into. I think that's the inertia of that launch is harder than what it takes me. Like I haven't made less than $10 million a year in a long time. But let's say I want to be around people that are making $50 million a year. And I haven't made $50 million personally. My companies have, but I haven't. And it's like, you know, they're hanging out at different clubs. They're doing different things. It's easier for me to get invited though than it would be somebody that's making $50,000 a year to get invited there.
Yeah.
So that's the good news.
Okay. I appreciate that. Sorry, I'm just like so paying attention to all this. I love it. I think it's really cool how you talk from experience, like just growing up, also being that guy that can offer the lower man kind of a hand.
Well, that's because I am that man. You know, I am that man, dude. I'll never walk into any room. But you have to have a core principles too.
Yeah,
it's not just about mastering skills and capabilities. Like, who are you?
Mm-hmm.
Have you wrote them down?
Yeah. Like, so we did this. We did this in our coaching group. Jimmy Rex took us down to Moab, and that's kind of where it all switched for me. Like before that, I was going through one of the hardest times of my life. Honestly, like. Parents getting divorced again, like families breaking, I have cousins passing away, just life was chaotic. And it was like from that moment Jimmy kind of took me under his wing and just was like, dude, listen, you can't control all that, but you can control what you can control. And so he had us write down like our core values, what makes us. And the coolest thing he did was the exercise where he told us like how to make a purpose, what our purpose is, especially in like Utah where it's kind of a bubble. You think in the LDS community, you think your purpose is to do this, this, and this. It's all kind of – you kind of have a roadmap for you.
Yeah. Lots of whys.
Yeah. Once you step away from
that's
that
what I heard
a little bit.
I don't know.
Yeah. Once you step away from that and you're kind of just alone, you got to figure that out. And that's one thing Jimmy's done really well with us. And yeah. Since that trip, my life, I feel like I've started controlling what I can control, my grades, work, going to the gym every day, all the little things.
Good.
And I've realized like the peace it brings to me and the happiness instead of all the chaos. I focus on what I can control. And
I like
that's
that.
honestly been the biggest thing for me.
Having your core your core values written down is so important. Like whenever I work with young kids, it's just like, okay, let's just – what's important to you? How do you know to do something or not do something? How do you – what's your decision tree? Because if you don't have some core values backing up your decisions, you'll just go everywhere and do everything, right? And that's not how winners win. Like for instance, one of mine is land the plane. If my core principles is landing the plane, I'm not just going to start a bunch of things and not finish.
Yeah.
Right? I'm going to land the damn plane.
Yeah.
That means I got to say no to a lot of things in order to finish the one thing that I'm already doing, which is flying this plane. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe don't fill up on bread. Right? That's another one of mine. Right? So many people fill up on the appetizer and never get to the main meal. Keep the main thing the main thing.
Yeah.
Right? Well, it's a good decision-making tree. Is this the main thing? Does this support the main thing? No, I'm not doing it. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I actually really like that. I agree with you 100%. And don't get distracted by all the noise and stuff, but keep it.
Yeah.
What you want.
Yeah, win and be
goal.
Humble.
Exactly.
Right? Who do you think you are? Right? Pick up the trash. That's another one of mine. Don't ever get too big that you aren't.
Yeah.
Like even on the CEO or the owner of the company, if I see trash on the ground, everybody's going to watch me mopping the floors, picking up the trash, emptying it, doing whatever I got to do to set the standard for everybody else. That way it's like if I'm willing to lead by example, like I expect all you guys to show up and lead too.
Yeah.
Right?
Lead from the front of the pack.
That's right. It's kind of that, you know, leaders eat last mentality. It's like, no, I'm in the fight with you guys. I'm no better than you. No better, you know, just my title doesn't make me better. My work ethic makes me better.
Yeah.
I'm going to show you motherfuckers how this thing's done. You
for
know,
sure.
And you're all going to step up and rise up to my standards, but I'm not going to fall to yours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for joining. One of the things I love to end every episode with is, none of us know when it's checkout time, when God will call us back. If you were to be remembered for one thing, what would that be?
The greatest dad on planet Earth. I think family is everything. You know, it's. I went to the ultrasound the other day. My little one's got arms and legs right now. 13-week ultrasound, and there's a leg and arms and the heart's beating, and like you just realize this miracle that's happening, and it's the size of a plum or something right now. And you're just like, God, this is just so miraculous that we're able to do this. And there's no greater responsibility as a man than raising a family and being a leader for your family. And it's such an honor and privilege to be able to do that. So like hopefully I make lots of money. Hopefully my businesses do epic things. I hope I'm remembered as this great friend that shows up for all his other friends. I think that who knows what else is in store for me that can leave legacy and impact that I can maybe do with my money. I have some big goals, saving animals and different things like that. But nothing will make me more proud than my kids standing up there talking about that I'm the greatest damn dad that on planet Earth and here's why, and they just can't shut up about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, thank you. Thank you for joining us today. I appreciate you.
Well, thanks for having me on. This was fun. And, you know, hopefully it inspires somebody who's listening to this. I will say if you're – I'm at Official Cody Sperber on Instagram. I used to be Clever Investor. I still have access to that account, but I sold it when I sold the company.
Okay.
So at Official Cody Sperber. If you have money that you ever want to invest and you want to put it in some great commercial projects, just go to – and you got to be an accredited investor. So
okay.
Somebody that's making over $200,000 a year
okay.
for the last couple years. Just go to Clever Capital Fund and just take a look at some of our cool commercial projects that we're doing. We're flipping banks. We're building affordable housing right now. We're doing some really cool, big, profitable projects that I'm really excited about. And then if you're in Arizona and you need flooring, FloorDaddy.com. Floor Daddy, baby. Floor Daddy. We bring the floor – the door to your – or we bring the floor to your door.
I love it.
Yeah, and you know, we'll make it easy on you. Give you get, especially if you say, "I heard Cody on a podcast." We'll give you a great price.
Awesome, perfect. Yeah. Thank you, brother. You can pause it.